So I'm getting my master's in the geography department here at University of Wisconsin, and I'm interested in the bigger institutional history of the Eagle Heights Community Gardens. A lot of the current gardeners don't, there's no written record really of what the gardens have been through their 50 years of existence, and so I'd like to, one, just have that history, two, understand what it's been as a place for the people who have gardened there and what they've taken away from their times in the garden. And also an idea of the garden's interactions with the university, the larger university institution, you know, so how it fits into the bureaucracy, or if it does, or if it doesn't, and how that has changed over time also. So I've started most of my conversations just asking, what were the gardens like when you were there? What do you remember from your time gardening?
Well, we lived in two separate locations in Eagle Heights because of renovations. And I just remember from both of them, them being far enough away that it was a pain when you had two little kids and were trying to carry all your equipment out there, but not too far that it would deter one from gardening. I mean, that was a problem because the last thing I wanted, I think many of us who were gardening wanted to do, was to drive there. I mean, that kind of seemed silly, and there wasn't really parking anyway.
Yeah.
But, so I'm starting out with something negative, but it is a memory I have of racing through Eagle Heights with two kids and, you know, enough snacks and water and toys and things to keep everybody occupied while we were there. But in that same memory is, and I dug up a couple pictures just to kind of refresh my memory too, was lots of time spent in the garden with my two kids that was just primo quality time, you know. So I think as far as bringing a family together, and my husband was the student at the time, and I worked in the community center, so I had a lot more flexibility, obviously, to my schedule. But as far as providing a great activity to get out of those teeny tiny apartments and go and feel productive, you know, not just sitting in the playground watching kids play, but rather, you know, working in your garden while your kids could still play. To me, that those 5 years that we had that opportunity were wonderful.
So how, when were you there?
We were there from, I knew you were going to ask this, over there, as I peeled out this morning, 87 to 92.
Oh, okay. And how, did you have the garden plot all 5 years, or how did you find
all five years, garden plots?
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when I'm speaking about quality time, it's also because, you know, there was nothing to compete for my kids' attention, so it wasn't a question of, no, you can't watch TV now, because it was just, no, you can't, we're here now, and there's nothing else to do. So, you know, you brought your bag of toys here, and you know, they helped with gardening as much as toddlers can help with gardening. But, you know, just having that kind of forced, we have a cabin up north, and we always think of it like that, that we had this forced family togetherness that, in the end, I think made a big difference about who we became as a family and the relationships that we had to each other. And the garden, I think, was clearly part of that. We also met a ton of people out there, too, because we see all kinds of people with their kids out there gardening. And as you know, it's quite an eclectic mix of residents there from every country in the world, practically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, meeting them out there, seeing how they garden, exchanging gardening tips, you know, how do you garden in your country, that kind of thing, and just our kids also playing with kids from other countries, even though that was happening back in the apartment complex as well, but just in a whole different setting. I think that just that contributed a lot to who my kids turned out to be, I would like to think. I should have called them and asked them their memories.
You should? Maybe I should call them and ask them their memories. I haven't talked to anybody who were children.
I mean, that would be,
children.
I don't know if they're, because my kids were, the oldest was five when we left, and the youngest was three, so, you know, whether a five and a three-year-old will have many memories, but,
Well, if you do happen to ask them, and you wanted to then send me a little email snippet of what their memories would be, that would be great. What were the pictures that you dug up of?
And I only found a couple. One of them was of, a couple of them are just the kids in the garden with, you know, holding big pumpkins or, you know, just silly posed shots that. You know, digging something. And then there's a couple of we used to do an annual hayride type thing in the fall.
Oh, wow.
You know, because you would have, like, the garden cleanup day, if I recall, where people were supposed to, you know, get their tomato cages out and and remove any articles so that they could come through and disc and plow.
Yeah.
And, but we would, you know, turn it into an event and have a hayride. And there's a couple pictures of me blowing up balloons and, you know, getting kids on and off the tractor and that kind of thing. They're off the wagon.
I'd love to see them.
Well, sure. I could scan them in and send them.
Would that be possible? That would be amazing.
Sure.
I'd really appreciate that.
I actually, that was my plan to do before I talked with you, but my photo albums, I just had to do a big banner for my mother-in-law's 90th birthday party, and the photo albums are just all over the place. And I thought, I'm never going to find these.
I'm surprised that you could find them.
I know there are more. So, yeah, I can scan you in about 10, probably.
Oh, that would be great. I've been asking people, and not many people have a lot of photos of the garden, which I've been surprised by, but you're the first person who said, I have photos.
Yeah, when we left Eagle Heights, I actually made a photo album just called, you know, Life in Eagle Heights, and so, you don't make photo albums anymore, they're all on your disc somewhere, but but I have those albums. I was pretty good back then about trying to keep a photo
Where was I going? Kids, so what kinds of things did you grow? And what made you want to garden in the first place? Had you gardened before?
Yeah, my husband and I had gardened. That was one of our first together activities we did before we got married. We both went to Michigan State University.
Okay.
And we heard from somewhere that there were these community gardens. They were way out. You had to drive to those. It wasn't possible to even ride a bike, I don't think. But they were pretty far out. But, you know, MSU is an ag school, and so there were lots of opportunities to, you know, go to extension meetings about how to garden and that kind of thing. It must have been a big push. That would have been back in the, undergraduate from there, 1980s. So that would have been, the late 70s, a big push for community gardens and that kind of thing. So we got a plot, and pretty much the first year just did it by, without any instructions at all. Kind of figured, well, you just put the stuff in the seed.
Yeah.
What happened. Planted way too early. Stuff came up, and on Memorial weekend, everything got frozen out.
Oh.
And we had to start all over again. But, you know, that was our first lesson of zones. Gardening zones. But, yeah, we had a garden whenever we had the space to have a garden ever since then, be it, you know, in a community garden setting or in our backyard, if it was possible. It's something that I don't know so much anymore for my husband, and maybe it's just because he knows how much pleasure I get out of it. He just leaves me to my gardening, but summer wouldn't be summer without a garden.
No, I agree. It'd be strange without a garden.
Yeah, we have a little farmer's market here, and part of me feels bad that I don't support that more often, just because I don't think they're on the verge of going out of business or anything, but just to, the communal activity of going down to the farmer's market. But I frankly have all those same vegetables in my garden, and so I we have enough to just feed the two of us or the four of us when we were four, and then, freeze a few things. It's by no means anything that's going to sustain us. But it's just been a part of our lives ever since we've been together, and I didn't do it before all that. I just started doing that in college.
So you grow mostly vegetables still? Did you
grow
mostly vegetables?
Your typical, I grow all kinds of greens, which that might be different from other people. I mean, I've got collard greens, mustard greens, Swiss chard. I try different greens every year, just because they are pretty carefree and you can freeze them easy, and I enjoy the way they taste.
Yeah.
And you can do lots of different things with them as far as different ethnic cuisines.
Yeah.
And then your typical salsa garden with, peppers and peppers and tomatoes and different kinds of peppers. And I usually grow eggplant and zucchini. Kind of a salsa / ratatouille garden. Carrots, always grow carrots. We got a little asparagus patch.
Oh, nice.
But I'm thinking back then we grew more basic stuff. I'm thinking, can't even remember, frankly. That's kind of weird. I think we probably grew, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, zucchini, that standard stuff. I didn't have micro herbs.
Mm-hmm.
But your standard northern.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were, I think while you were there, there were certain sections that were organic and then others that weren't organic. Where did you fall in that? Okay, so what did you think of that differentiation, and did you want an organic plot? How did you decide where you wanted your plot in the garden?
Yeah, we've never used any fertilizer or pesticides, even though sometimes it was to our detriment, but just didn't want to use it, and so I think we always had an organic plot, but I'm not a diehard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's the right thing to do, but I don't remember being one of the militant ones that said everybody should go organic. Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't feel like people were dumping vast amounts of stuff on their gardens anyway. I mean, you had to carry it out there. So if anything, it might have been a little of the dust type things that you would see people use on tomato plants or something like that. So, and there was such rich manure out there from, I think they must have got it from the cow barns and the horse, the cow barns, and they would mix it in with leaves. I mean, I'm not sure who was doing that. I'm assuming that was you know, the garden or the grounds crews. But that just was always there. There was always a huge pile of cow manure and horse manure that had been worked into leaves.
Oh, just on the side that you could.
It was free access for anybody.
Huh.
And I assumed that, you know, the cow barns were happy to get rid of their crap. The people that picked up the leaves were happy to get rid of the leaves. And so that was always available. So I don't think anybody probably ever used any fertilizer. If anything, maybe people used some pesticides. And again, I did feel like it was huge amounts being dumped on there. So I wasn't that militant about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was important to offer both plots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Types of plots.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. But what were there rules in the gardens? And what,
there were.
What
and
were
I mean,
they related
you know,
to?
It was run by a loose bunch of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was, and I'm not going to remember his name, and my husband couldn't remember his name either. He's probably retired now, although he was a little older than us, so he's probably retired. And he lived in one of the apartments there, you know, so he's kind of like an on-site handyman, maintenance guy.
Okay.
I wish I could remember his name. But anyway, he always was a member of the garden committee, and so he was in charge of some of the bigger things, like the watering system. I mean, that was pretty cool that you had that whole watering system out there and didn't have to drag water there somehow. But I remember that we took turns turning water on and off, because I remember one night getting a call in the middle of the night that the water was on, you know, because that somebody had left a spigot open or something. And so, I mean, it was this real ragtag loose of a bunch of volunteers.
Okay.
And there were some rules, you know, but they were more courtesy rules than anything else. You know, when you're out there with your kids, don't let your kids trample in somebody else's garden. And I should have looked. I should have looked to see. I bet I have my old gardening folder somewhere. Now that I'm thinking of it.
If you can always look for it in there.
Yeah, I should look for it and see, because you didn't find anything like that from back then.
Well, I haven't found things, especially from the 80s. I feel like I haven't found a lot from the 80s. There's some rules or the garden application from the 90s, but they're mostly maybe like 93.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So it doesn't go
that far back.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily go that far back. And maybe I just haven't done enough digging. I haven't finished my digging, but
I mean, but there were things like, you know, don't leave. I mean, because you were working with a lot of international people, you had to, some of them were pretty obvious, but you had to make sure just that people were aware, so, you know, don't leave the water running. Because some people, if they were near a spigot, would want to just kind of leave it, you know, they'd hook their sprinkler up and then disappear for days. And because you could run hoses from that spigot and put a sprinkler in there if you wanted to. I'm trying to think of, a lot of times we had trouble with parking because people wanted to be able to pull in there and park, and there just wasn't room for parking in there. I don't know if that's still the case. But
oh, no, there's no room, yeah.
Yeah, so there was no parking. Mm-hmm. There used to be I think a sign out at the front entrance that just was like, you know, your top five courtesy rules. But Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there any...
I'm trying to remember, at one point, I remember I got angry because we were down to, like, two of us. And so I went and plastered flyers out in every building that said, if we don't get five more volunteers in the garden committee by the, you know, by this date, we're canceling the garden. There won't be any gardens here. So right away we got plenty of people.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to think, so what did we do? What was our...
Yeah, so, yeah, if you need... So you needed people. So what were your job? Or when were you on the garden committee? You started gardening in 87, but then...
I mean, I think I was on it for
right
the whole 5 years of the
Okay, okay.
Somebody had to check the water pipes. I remember that you had to go out there and just make sure every once in a while that nothing was leaking or that somebody, like I said, hadn't left something on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was probably somebody in charge because the maintenance guy, he was a member of the committee just because it made sense, and he gardened out there as well, just because he had, you know, some of the technical knowledge with the pipes and that kind of thing, because it was hooked up to a... I mean, that was something that I wondered if that was illegal. It was hooked up to a fire hydrant.
Okay.
I remember there were some questions about whether that was appropriate or not. There was something that maybe the fire hydrant was compromised because of the way this water system was set up. But, what the hell else did we do? I mean, you know, I guess we organized... I mean, you had to have the whole sign-up procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets what plot.
Yeah.
You know, and all of that. And collecting the money. And I think... We had gone through, not we, but I think they, earlier people had gone through the, or was that the problem? I think maybe nobody had gone through the 501c, you know, to become a charitable organization, or a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And so technically, you know, you're collecting money and that kind of thing. I remember that we actually went through that process, I think, to become a nonprofit organization.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because of the money collection and that kind of thing. But yeah, somebody had to be in charge of that whole, every year, organizing to sign up and then distributing the plots and then letting people know what plot they got. And that, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't think it took a ton of work, but it needed a couple people to make sure it ran. And then the whole garden cleanup activity. And I think we tried to have a couple other activities during the year, like a I think we did like a harvest supper type thing in the community center where people, you know, supposedly cooked something from their garden and just brought it for a big harvest dinner just for a community event.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So not a ton of work, but you need it, you know, you can't have one person doing all of that.
No, you definitely can't have one person do it all.
I mean, I didn't want to be the garden Nazi.
No. Did you have interactions with university employees, or how did that? Were you paying rent for the land? Were you?
If I recall, we were, and that's why you had to collect the money for the garden plot, because I think it was like $25 a plot for the year.
Okay.
So we were we were renting the land from the university.
Okay.
And then, like I said, his name was Howard. Howard sat on the committee, so he didn't, I don't think he ever clocked in hours for the stuff he did with us, because he did it more as a resident. And then I think we also had to pay for the plowing and the disking, too.
Okay, yeah.
So every year you had to kind of figure out, okay, for the rent that you're going to have, and the plowing, the disking, and maybe Howard submitted some hours, I can't remember, but it seemed like he did, but... You know, so you can't, you know, somebody had to be a treasurer and kind of keep track of all that.
Yeah, yeah. So the main interaction with the university would be to arrange the plowing and the disking?
Right, exactly. And because we had this guy that was in maintenance who lived in Eagle Heights, pretty much everything we just said, Howard, can you take care of that? You know, so I don't think any of us had any real direct interaction with the university employees. And I always remember there being this sentiment that that the gardens were a pain in the ass somehow, and that the university would rather not have them. Maybe they were worried about liability.
Liability.
Oh, if something happened to somebody out there, that would be something that I'd like to check on if I have some notes, because I remember, you know, I just remember this feeling that the university would rather have not had them, and it might have had to do with liability issues.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what I'm wondering. In the end, you know, a lot of those little organizations, I felt that I lived there at the end of an era. Those, you know, there was a food co-op that's now, I don't even know what it, if it's even there anymore, if it's just a little grocery store that the university runs. Mm-hmm. And there were two cooperative daycares, and then there were these garden cooperatives. So, I mean, it was the end of the, you know, the 60s era cooperative movement, and the university was just kind of gobbling it all up and saying, we're just going to run it.
Mm.
And I, you know, I don't know if the garden co-op is still, do you know, is it still truly a garden co-op, or does it have, is it more officially under university?
Well, what do you mean by a garden? I've never heard it referred to as the garden co-op before.
Yeah, it used to be called the Eagle Heights Garden Cooperative.
So it used to be called the Eagle Heights Garden Cooperative.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just, you know, again, like I said, a non-profit organization that we rented land from the university.
Mm-hmm.
And the two daycares were like there, or they weren't even called daycares back then. They were called the nursery school and the PCC, Parent-Child Center, and the food co-op was in, you know, those were all run by volunteers and individual, you know, organizations that had their own charters and their own nonprofit status and that kind of thing. And I think, you know, I felt like as, when we were leaving in 1992, the university was just kind of taking all that stuff over. And I think part of it was because, you know, you were having fewer and fewer full-time or part-time spouses, one or the other at home, to volunteer for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they felt like the services were, and the quality and the consistency of the services were starting to fail. And so, but they knew that these services, you know, they knew people still wanted a place to shop conveniently for just last minute items and co-op, you know, daycare type. Because now I think it's a full blown daycare.
Yeah, it is.
And the garden co-op, I don't know if it's now a...
Well, now it's called Eagle Heights Community Gardens.
Community Gardens. Maybe it was called that before, but I just remember it was more of a, you know, the university didn't have anything to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of... And the community center, frankly, was the same way. You know,
interesting.
I mean, I worked there, and I was a paid employee, but there was also this, and they probably still have their representatives. You know, they still have a representative group.
Yeah.
It used to feel like back in the 80s that the residents ran these programs. Whereas now I'm pretty sure the university runs these programs, but residents, you know, sit on an advisory board or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, you know, for better or for worse, it's just, it was the end of an era.
Yeah.
You know, there just weren't as many spouses, whether it be the male or female, staying at home with kids that could volunteer for this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it was more, both parents are in school, and they need full-time daycare, and who's got time to volunteer at a food co-op, you know, that kind of thing.
And
so it was kind of sad to me, because I felt like, well, I missed the whole 60s thing, so I got a little taste of it here, and it's obviously dying.
Was that your family's mindset, the more the 60s cooperative community?
Yeah, I mean, I like that kind of stuff, you know, and... but you know, that was I had just made a decision back then to try to work part time and stay the other half time at home, and so to have those kinds of things to volunteer for and be involved in were fun. I mean, I remember I was the Asian food purchaser, so I would go to Asian Foods, you know, that Asian Midway store that I know is still there.
It is.
Madison last Friday, and I went by it on Park Street, you know, and they would give me a discount and I would buy like $500 worth of Asian foods that the Asian community told me they wanted in the little grocery, and then haul it back and put it on the shelf. I was an orderer for the co-op. I can't remember what I ordered, but I think I ordered from like North Farm Cooperative, you know, that's a big distributor for co-op. You know, so I had all these little jobs that felt meaningful because they served this community.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe people are still doing that, but I wasn't paid by the university.
Mm-hmm.
I was paid by, or I wasn't paid at all. I was volunteering. I mean, these were all volunteer jobs. The community center job was paid. I mean, that was, you know, I was getting it, because I was running, you know, part-time running the office there.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about how those dynamics have shifted over time. It's definitely one of the things I'm interested in. And I mean, the gardens are still run by a garden committee. So it is primarily volunteers from the gardening pool. Mm-hmm. But it's not just, I don't know, were there community members who gardened in the gardens when you were there, or was it just Eagle Heights residents and
I know
students?
We had people ask, and I think if there were plots left over, we did let community members in, but it was rare that there were. Mm-hmm. It was usually that we didn't have enough for all the residents.
Okay.
I mean, it always amazed me how many people were out there, you know, gardening. It was pretty amazing.
What was the seasonality of the garden like? Did people come and were they working there the entire time? How did it change over the gardening season?
I felt like people were out there the entire time. I mean, a lot of it would ebb and flow with university schedule, so to speak. So, you know, around exam time, you would see fewer, I would say, Americans in the gardens, but it seemed like with most of the, at that time anyways, most of the international students, only one of, if it were a couple, only one of them were in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I know that a lot of American women said, oh, I feel like I'm back in feudal times because there's a bunch of women out in the gardens with their kids.
And that
was a couple negative comments that I would hear from women who were in school, you know, and usually maybe couples where both husband and wife were in school, and so felt pressured that they couldn't keep their garden up and that kind of thing. But I don't know, that never, for some reason that never bothered me. I kind of liked it out there with a bunch of women and their kids. It was kind of a laid back feeling, I thought. I don't really have any problems with that. I mean, I don't know what those women's situations were. Maybe they didn't want to be in the garden with their kids and wish they could be sitting in the classroom. But, it just felt very comfortable out there with a bunch of women working in the fields with their kids running around. So. And there were men out there, too. I don't want to paint it lopsided towards females in the garden. But that was the majority, it seemed to me.
Uh-huh.
And then on weekends, there would be whole families out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you would see people there from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
And I think the international crowd took better care of their gardens probably than the American crowds. I mean, they seem to have been doing this more for subsistence, you know, than we had. And so their gardens always looked wonderful, in my opinion. They seemed to know what they were doing a lot more than we did.
Uh-huh.
I was just more of a hobby where I think a lot of them, they truly were trying to just eat from that garden as much as possible.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to tell even when you're out there who's trying to do what with their plot.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's such a quilt, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing from one plot to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, oftentimes I would just wander through trying to figure out, what are they growing? What is that, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of the international people would get seeds from home, you know, to grow particular items from their home countries.
Yeah. Was there a seed fair when you were there, or did that start after you?
Oh no, there wasn't that. That's cool.
Yeah. It's actually they get companies to donate seeds, and so you get free seeds.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, no, we didn't have that.
Okay. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, somebody was thinking.
Yes, very innovative, right?
Yeah.
I've also been asking people about. The weeds? Do you remember specific weed problems? Or
you know,
specific?
When you asked me earlier about the rules, that was a problem.
Okay.
Some people would just let their gardens, you know, they wouldn't keep them weeded, and then you had all that weed seed flying around. And I do remember that was an issue. And I think we had a rule that if the weeds got above knee level, then we reserved the right to come and cut them, you know, just mow your plot down.
Wow, okay.
I don't know that we ever did it. But it was the threat, you know, that you were supposed to keep your weeds to a minimum just because of the weed seed.
Mm-hmm.
And because then, you know, that it would all get tilled back in. And
yeah.
Of course, if that applied to my plot now at home, I'd be plowed under. But it gets a little out of hand in August. But that's one of the rules that I do remember having trouble enforcing.
Okay.
And I think we actually would go around and tag plots and maybe even send a notice to the owner of the plot that, you know, if you don't take care of your weeds, we're going to come and cut her down. But I don't know if we ever really enforced it.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed kind of mean.
Yeah.
Because there would be obviously stuff growing in there, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if I could, now that you bring it up, if I could name one thing that was the biggest trouble, it wasn't so much the water as it was the people not keeping their weeds down.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people would plant and then, you know how academic schedules go, they might be gone for a month,
uh-huh.
You know, because they're not necessarily making, and maybe they've gone home to their home state or their home country,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that would happen quite often, and so it felt, you know, difficult to threaten people with mowing stuff down, but
mm-hmm.
The threat was there, but like I said, I don't know that we ever did it.
Yeah, so there wasn't any good way of communicating with the gardeners once the plots had been assigned.
Right, exactly. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't think, if I recall, we never even had, we never had a big general meeting of everybody because there's so many people, I don't know if you could even, where you put them all for a meeting. So
yeah.
There was a newsletter, I remember, that was another job of somebody who was to do a monthly, it was probably monthly, and, have a recipe in there and then just reminders about the weeds and that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Was it a newsletter specific for the gardens, or was it a newsletter piece that went into the Eagle Heights newsletter?
I think it was, I'm trying to remember now. Maybe it just went into the general Eagle Heights newsletter.
Okay.
I'm going to check and see if I have a folder. I'm infamous for saving stuff.
I'm so glad you're infamous for saving stuff.
Because I know I have an Eagle Heights folder because, when I moved to Stevens Point, I wasn't exactly sure where my career was taking me next,
mm-hmm.
and so I considered all that work I did as, community
uh-huh.
organizing type stuff, and I did make up a portfolio and brought it
mm-hmm.
along, so I must have something in there.
Mm.
So I will dig tonight.
Excellent.
Sorry, I didn't think of that before.
Don't worry. I mean, I think that if I'm making you think of things that you can then dig for, it might make it even easier for you.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, because I think that, I know that there was a garden article in the newsletter, but I think other people have also mentioned this separate newsletter that I've never seen a copy of, and I'd love to.
There's also someone on campus, it's kind of funny, I was in a meeting when I first got a job here,
uh-huh.
and we were in this meeting together, and she looked at me, and she said, I know you, and I said, from where? I said, I just moved from Addison. She said, yeah, me too. She said, she didn't call me the garden nut. She said, weren't you the one that put the notice up that said, if we don't get it by the end of this month, the gardens are done? I said, oh yeah, that was me. And she's still here, so I should maybe give you her name or call her and ask her
yeah,
if she'd be willing to talk to you to see if she's got some memories that I don't have.
Yeah, that'd
I think
be great.
She took over after I left. She was one of the chairs of the committee.
Oh, yeah, then I'd love to talk to
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I'll see if she has some memories.
Mm-hmm.
There's also another woman who, actually, we were quite good friends with, and we lost touch with them for years, and then recently got in touch, I don't even remember how, on the internet,
mm-hmm.
She's a geography professor down at, I think it's called, it's in San Antonio, Texas, I think it's called Trinity College down
mm-hmm.
there, and I remember she did, she may have done her thesis on the gardens as well, that would have been back in 90. Like in 1992, 1993, her name is Christine Drennan. Does that name ever come up?
No.
No.
How do you spell her last name?
D-R-E-N-N-O-N.
D-R-E-S-N?
N-N.
N-N.
Drennan, yeah, D-R-E-N-N-O-N, Christine.
Okay, great.
And when Catherine emailed me, I forwarded it to Christine, and like
mm-hmm.
I said, we've only been in very loose, kind
mm-hmm.
of, can't believe we haven't connected in 20 years or whatever, contact.
Yep.
Sent a few photos of our kids that used to be inseparable to show each other what they look like now, but
uh-huh.
I forwarded Catherine's email and said, hey, would you be interested in talking to this student? But
uh-huh.
She's not replied to my emails before.
Okay.
She, I don't know, if that doesn't necessarily mean she doesn't want to talk to you, but she's, I don't think she replied to the last one I sent her, which was over spring break. So.
Yeah, sometimes people get buried in email.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly.
Understandable. Well, I will contact her, too.
And yeah.
We should have multiple things.
Right, right.
Excellent. Christine Drennan, the other woman. Oh, the
other
woman's
name is Therese.
Therese?
How does she spell it? So Christine is at Trinity College, and I just uh-huh. found her by looking up Trinity College and okay. finding the faculty, you know, in the geography department.
Okay. Great.
And the woman that's here at UWSB is named Therese. It's T-E-R-E-S-E.
R-E-S-E.
Barta. B-A-R-T-A.
Okay.
And she's just tbarta at uwsb.edu.
Tbarta. Okay.
So I'll give her a heads up and just, you know, I'm sure she'd be willing to be interviewed as well.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Huh. Newsletter.
Where's my... If I look for a newsletter, I'll try to see if I've got something like the old charter or whatever, like with the, you know, like the rules of the garden, that kind of thing. And
yeah.
I don't remember what the positions were that people had. I mean, I'm assuming it was like, you know, treasurer and the typical positions, you know, and then somebody who had to organize the whole parsing out of the garden.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any more about applying for 501c?
You know, I don't, and I just remember that being, you know, somebody saying, God, we should do this, God, we should do this, and I thought we did.
Mm-hmm.
Are they now, do you know?
Well, now all of that land is under the university, and it's part of the Lakeshore Nature Preserve.
Oh, okay.
And so the gardens are not a separate fiscal entity, I believe. So they're run by their own volunteer committee, and the manager of the Lakeshore Nature Preserve really just lets them do what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
but they have to, all of their budget goes through the university.
So people still pay for plots.
So people still pay for plots. And I think they have their own bank account, but it's managed or underneath, or it's overseen by the university's fiscal responsibility too, because it's all the money is still theirs, but it's not, they aren't their own entity really. So
and
it's
see,
strange.
I think another reason why the university did that and is because, you know, here we are, a bunch of volunteers,
mm-hmm.
you know, dealing with, it wasn't so much a problem with the gardens, but like I was the treasurer once for one of the little nursery school co-op things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know nothing. I'm horrible at balancing my own checkbook.
Yeah.
And I made a fairly major accounting error one month.
Oh, no.
And, you know, just transferred a number wrong in a column where we thought we had, I don't know how much, I don't even remember now. It was embarrassing what happened, but it was like, I thought we had $10,000 and we only had $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're talking about, we've got people who were paid, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they were paid nursery school teachers or, you know, childcare teachers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I think that was another thing that the university felt like these people are trying really hard to do, you know, do the right thing, but
mm-hmm.
they're not accountants and they're just volunteers.
Yeah.
And I think also, again, for liability reasons and just for consistency and maintaining the services, that was one reason why they felt the need to take over some of this stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I understand that after mm-hmm. I made that teacher accounting error for weeks thereafter. So I can imagine that's why they've taken oversight of a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think there's a balancing act that has to go on, most definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I think of our food co-op here at Stevens Point. You know, there are three paid positions,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's professional people running it, and then the army of volunteers to keep it going.
Yeah.
Whereas this was the only professional were in the daycare's case were just the two teachers.
Yeah.
You know, but the co-op and everything else, we were, you know, it was just a bunch of volunteers trying to do the right thing that didn't necessarily know what they were doing.
Yep. Well, I seem to know pretty much what you were doing. It seems like the gardens were mostly self-run, like the formula was in place and you just had to...
Yeah, I mean, somebody had set it up well, you know, and so it was just a matter of maintaining it and finding enough volunteers to keep it all running.
Yeah,
And it was great having Howard there because if push came to shove,
mm-hmm.
you know, Howard could do it.
Yeah.
And he would do it. And I think he felt okay doing extra hours out there just because, I mean, I think there was a little bit of maybe tension once in a while, like, what are you doing out in the gardens in the middle of the day when you're, you know, the gardens aren't supposed to be part of your work, you know, your paid work position. But in general, it was great having him there. just because if there was an emergency, he could take care of it.
Where did he work? He was a university?
He must have worked. I mean, he lived in one of the Eagle Heights apartments.
Mm, okay.
And so he must have worked for housing. We called it housing back then.
Yeah.
And, they probably had 5 maintenance guys, and Howard was, I think, the only live-in one.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember his last name?
I don't.
Okay. It's okay.
Maybe my husband will, but he couldn't even come up with Howard.
Well, maybe now you've gotten Howard, he'll pick up the ball and remember the last name.
I'm wondering if Jan would, because...
I should ask Jan.
Because he was there when she was there.
Yeah.
Is Laura Shear still there?
Yes.
Laura might remember.
Okay. That's also a very good idea. Need to get back in contact with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming that he'd probably been doing that since he was 19 years old. I'm assuming he could probably he's retired by now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's also the end of an era where somebody like Howard could have a beer fridge in the basement of the garage where all the equipment was kept with his girly calendars, and the guys would come over and play poker. I mean, there's nothing they have anymore.
Once that's gone, he's done too.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good work ethic.
Yeah.
In some ways, don't work too hard.
Right.
Are there any specific garden stories that times or events in the garden that you remember really well, besides just bringing your kids out and working in that general atmosphere?
The only one that sticks out is one that, again, that has to do with my own kids, and I remembered it when I found those pictures the other day.
Yeah.
We had that, the end of garden cleanup, and, we would have a bonfire, too, a huge bonfire.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of fun. Did anybody get a fire permit? I don't know. Did you get one of them? We had it, because we would burn all some of the garden debris that couldn't be mulched.
Uh-huh.
So people would just pile up, or people, if you had, a lot of people just use sticks and things for bean vines and that kind of thing, so,
mm-hmm.
or just for cordoning off parts of your garden, so, any of that kind of debris that could be burned, we would just, have people bring it in a big pile and have this big bonfire, and so,
nice.
I remember having one kid in a stroller, and the other one, was probably 1 and 3, and so, the 3-year-old who, in my opinion, hated the 1-year-old from all of the actions that I witnessed, came running up to me just in tears and hysterics because he thought that this guy was he saw a guy with a stroller and he thought he was taking the little brother.
Oh, no.
And that was the one and only time I saw a sign of affection from the other one to the younger one. But that doesn't have anything really to do with the garden. It just happened to happen that day that we were out there.
Yeah.
So there were so many people around, and I wasn't, I never worried about somebody stealing my child. So I probably plopped him down in the stroller and went off to do something else. In general, just those fond memories of hearing so many different languages,
mm-hmm.
And just so many different gardening techniques. And in general, people being fairly polite to each other,
mm-hmm.
And curious, I think it brought out, in many ways, it brought out the best of people until your weeds got too tall. But
mm-hmm.
other than that, I think that people in general who went out there had it was a relaxing time and a time when they could, put away all the stresses of studying and raising a family and that kind of thing. And,
mm-hmm.
And just enjoy being with a bunch of people from a bunch of other places all interested in doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sappy, but I miss that. I mean, in my little garden in the backyard, I don't, it's just me.
Yeah.
And we do have community gardens here, and I've talked about, adopting one for, because we have a program in town where you can donate garden, garden vegetables to, I don't think it's called Second Harvest. I think that's a national organization, but, something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I keep thinking, what am I thinking? I can barely keep my own garden up. I can't.
Yeah.
That isn't going to work right now. Maybe when I retire or
uh-huh.
work half time or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So Is there anything you want to know about what the gardens are like now? Or questions you have that I might be able to, maybe able to answer?
Well, so you said it's a little bit more overseen by the university, but still has this garden committee. Mm-hmm. You know how many people serve on that?
I think it varies. I'd say there's a good core group of 10 people.
Yeah.
Who go every, it's monthly
meetings. Monthly meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a good group.
Because I've driven by there. In fact, this summer we drove by there to show some German friends of ours who are visiting, you know, our life back in Madison. Cause they came in through on the Van Galder bus and we picked them up there. And, that was one thing that looked just about the same, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just that big hill of a bunch of different colored garden plots.
And, yeah.
Whereas, you know, the rest of Eagle Heights, since we lived there, has been totally renovated and the community center is like double the size it was before. And,
yeah.
But it was kind of a good feeling to know, well, the gardens are still the same, it looks like.
I'd say there are two big changes on the physical side of them, mm-hmm. is they aren't plowed every year.
Well, they're not.
No, they're not. So
people have to turn their own plot over.
Yeah, people have to turn their own plot over. It means that people can plant perennials.
Yeah, I guess that's probably why I never did do herbs out there, because it was going to be always plowed to death.
Yeah, so there's a lot of raspberries and strawberries and asparagus.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is really nice.
But then they do plow it every...
No, they never. No, never.
Oh, they never do now. Okay, no. So that you can keep your perennials.
So you can keep your perennials, yes. Right. So it's never...
Now, see, I think when they plowed this, they used to spread manure, too.
Mm.
So, I mean, that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
That you got this infiltration of some good humus and that kind of matter. So now are people just responsible for fertilizing their own plots with what's available there? I'm assuming they still have that big pile.
Yeah, there's still a big pile of composted dirt and manure. Mm-hmm. There's no manure there, just compost and mulch.
Because, see, I swear there used to be from the cow barn.
I didn't
know there was, because it smelled.
Yeah.
And we would tell our kids to stay out of it.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Good idea. And then it's also all organic. I don't know.
Oh, it's all organic. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I mean... People should be able to abide by that. Are they still, if I recall, they were 25 by 25 feet. Are they still the same size?
Yeah, 25 by 25. Mm-hmm. I mean, but there's still so many odd shapes. I don't know if they're...
Yeah, I remember that. Because you would get them, like a map of them.
Mm-hmm.
And some people didn't want those odd shapes, and other people didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I remember, you know, a lot of times, of course, people, I was trying to remember, would we let people have their same plots back?
Yeah, that's what I was...
I think you got to request, and then that was, I mean, that was a job, trying to, you know, match all these people up with their requests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah.
And they still have a watering system out there.
Yep, the same watering system.
Mm-hmm.
And...
That type of hiding.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what happened one night, but we got a phone call from a friend who had just come home late at night and driven by and said, aren't you on water duty when Howard's gone?
Oh.
And I said, there's like a geyser out there right now. And so, that was it. If there was a problem like that, you could go to the fire hydrant, turn off the fire hydrant, and that would turn on the water. But then, of course, the hydrant was turned off. So there was all those kinds of things that I'm sure the university just was like, okay, we can only look the other way, so no.
Yeah,
we had a big key to the fire hydrant now, I remember that. So if there was a fire, it might be a problem.
So where was the key kept? Somewhere out at the...
Yeah, Howard had it.
Of course.
So when Howard went out of town, you'd have to decide, okay, who's going to be the water, you know, the over, make sure that nothing goes wrong with the water.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, they were all, and, you know, like with the community center, one thing you had to do is if there was a group renting it at night, then you had to go back when they were done and, you know, make sure that they'd cleaned up and that kind of thing, and then lock the whole place up again.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this would be sometimes be at 2 o'clock in the morning because you could rent it till all hours of the night.
Yeah.
And, I didn't want to go up there by myself at 2 o'clock in the morning, so my husband would go do it. And I think all of our husbands were doing it. But then at one point, you know, liability-wise, people are like, well, you know, they're not really a pain in the... So, I mean, you know, it was back in the days when Lucy Cussy still was okay.
Yeah.
And I think, I understand why they've made those changes, but I think I missed that era of being so tight about everything.
It makes sense, but in other times it goes too far as well.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, nothing's really going to happen and we'll all be okay.
Right. Yeah.
This isn't done exactly to the books.
Right. Yeah. Well, can I ask a few questions of you?
Oh, definitely.
So yes. Where are you from originally?
I am from Maine originally.
Oh, and how did you end up out here?
Oh, who knows? No. I grew up in Maine. I went to my undergraduate in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been interested in landscapes and biology and how, but also the social side of natural systems and how we can connect them. I have my bachelor's in biology, but I never really wanted to just do research because it's not... It seems too disconnected from all the social issues that I find so important, but they I want to figure out how to connect them. There's always ethnobotany. I'm also interested in heritage seeds and seed saving and how all of that works. But so I took a few years off, and then I came here primarily to work with Bill Cronin, who's an environmental historian at UW. So,
William Cronin, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he, we're redoing our general education program here, and an article that I read by him that somebody sent it to me a couple of years ago. It's called Only Connect.
I have seen it.
And, it just talks about what do undergraduates really need to learn, and it's written in real nice, simple language instead of, all the catalog language that you come across when you're coming on to read it anyway, And the funny thing is that my younger son is going to school in the Twin Cities, and he came home, he's a junior now, but when he was a senior, freshman, he came home for one of the breaks and kind of tossed something in my lap and said, here, we read this in class, and I know you like this kind of shit, so I saved it for you. And it's the same article.
Oh, funny.
Only Connect, I think it's called, so when we were trying to write because one of my colleagues who's on the committee with me actually studied under William Cronin. He's an environmental historian, and he said, if I could just plagiarize this is what I'd like to say to the, to the faculty senate. Here's what we need to do for a general education program. Yeah, you can't really plagiarize that, so.
No.
We tried to rewrite it in UWSB terms, but. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
He really thinks about changes in landscape and how things have changed over time, but also how to connect this academic world to things outside of academics. And so that's been so I don't really know what I want to end up doing with my geography master's degree, but I really like that this project has given me a chance to connect to the specific place of the gardens and everybody who works out there, and then to the people who have been gardeners out there. And I feel like there's a lot. Everybody's just so enthusiastic to talk about it. And
there are experiences. Have you run into anybody who has a bad memory?
No, not really.
There is that memory of, okay, let's go to the garden. Take an hour to get ready to go. You can imagine.
Well, two kids as young as yours and then lugging.
A hoe and a shovel and then a bag of toys and enough snacks to keep everybody quiet and shut up so I can actually get something done. It just was usually a little battery-powered tape recorder. We would just all laugh when we would see each other out there with oh my God, how did you carry all this? One other thing I have a good memory of is seed swapping. I learned to grow because my husband and I taught for 2 years in Korea, and so, we were fairly connected to the Korean community when we got to Eagle Heights, and I learned to grow quite a few Korean vegetables just from getting seeds from the Korean gardener, so that was kind of cool.
Interesting. One thing that I haven't been able to do successfully, and I think it's indicative of the diversity of the place, is I've really only been able to connect with other English speakers.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a lot of what Jan calls the Chinese grandparents there mm-hmm. now, who come and live with their students for a year or two.
Oh, yeah, they're out there with those kids on their back, hoeing and gardening. Yeah. And,
So it's a lot of people. It's not the students who are taking care of the garden plots, but it's their parents.
Exactly.
And
right.
And they don't speak any English. So I've, like, they've recognized me now in the garden, but I haven't been able to say, like, what is this place to you?
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
It would be. So I don't know if you talked to any of the Koreans when you were there about what it was like.
No, I lost total touch with any of them. The only woman I know, and I don't know if she still works there, but this was quite a while ago, I went back and just was kind of cruising through the gardens in the car, and there was Lyman, and I don't remember if Lyman had a last name or if she just was known by Lyman, and she was putting up the garden, you know, putting up like the garden cleanup sign. Mm. And she was a student there when I was there, and then she told me she was working at the community center, that, you know, she somehow had a green card and was working there. I have no idea if she's still working there.
I'll have to. How do you spell her name?
I think it was L-A-I-M-A-N, Lyman.
Okay.
And she was Chinese.
Okay.
Because she would at least have, an N to some of those people.
Yeah,
and
I
could do translations if necessary.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I just need to. There's been the other thing about this place is there's so many connections and things to synthesize that it's been hard to do it all at once. You know,
I mean, I would think somebody on the garden committee would know at least one person that could to an end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to whatever community is out there.
Yeah, I think that's true. I haven't pursued it as much as I need to.
If you go to, like, I know when we were there were all those student groups, you know, there's the Korean, the KSA, the Korean Student Organization, it seemed like every ethnic group had their own organization. Even if you said, could you put the word out that I'd like to talk to a couple gardeners, I'm sure they'd love to.
I need to do that. Yeah, it's a very good idea. Did you have more questions for me? I think you said a few.
I was just curious how you came to where you're at in your point in life. So is this do you have a research assistantship or?
I actually I have a teaching
assistant. What kind of classes do you teach?
I teach environmental conservation, geography 339.
Cool.
It's good. It's a big class, so there are a total of 3 TAs. And then 2. It's strange. It's split into halves in the semester. So the first half we do sort of an overview of American environmental conservation, the history of going from Thoreau and Muir and Leopold, you know, like what conservation has been here. And then there's this drastic shift halfway through where a new lecturer comes in and we do modern international conservation.
Exactly.
So it's good. It's good. But it's a lot of work. I feel like I don't have a lot of time for research when I'm taking classes and teaching.
I know. My master's degree is in German, and we get taught 2 classes a semester, and I always wanted to take 3 because I wanted to do an ESL, kind of an ESL. You know, you can't get a minor as a grad student, but have coursework in English as a second language, and I just always felt so stretched. You know, couldn't teach the classes the way I wanted to. I couldn't take all 3 and really do them justice either.
Exactly.
Somehow that feeling just has stayed with me ever since then.
Yeah.
You gotta let something go. But I don't wanna let something go. And I wanna have a garden too.
Do
you enjoy living in Madison?
I do enjoy Madison.
Are you in Eagle Heights?
I'm not in Eagle Heights. I live on the east side actually. I spend a lot of time out at Eagle Heights. I love going on walks through the woods, but also
being
in my garden.
What prime real estate, because we lived in the 500s that faced Lake Mendota.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm sure the people in Sherwood would drive by all the time thinking, oh my gosh, we could have some beautiful homes here.
Yeah. I know, it's incredible. It's really beautiful out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, because when we first came, I just said, I just come from living abroad. I said, I don't want to live in a teeny tiny apartment complex. And so we thought we could buy a house because we'd gone to graduate school in Kansas and we could have have bought a house there, mm-hmm. but living in Kansas is not living in Madison. And
no.
so we realized quite quickly that there was no way, unless I was going to go back to work, that we were going to be able to do anything but live in Eagle Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, my heart just fell, thinking, I just don't want to live in this environment. But in the end, uh-huh. it was wonderful,
mm-hmm.
you know. Our kids had friends from all over the world, and when my kids were, when we first moved here and he went off to kindergarten, he came home and said, you know, I said, how was it? He goes, oh, it was wonderful, except kids really have weird names here. I said, what do you mean? He said, like Tyler and Brendan. And I'm like, typical American names to me. And then I realized, oh, that's true. Your friends in Eagle Heights were Omar and Che Young
yeah.
and Alfredo. So totally different crowd now. But,
Good.
I mean, you just fell out your door and there were kids for your kids to play with. And
uh-huh.
working at the community center, Catherine and I swapped daycare, so we never had to pay for any daycare, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that support is really nice.
5 years was enough, though.
But
especially when near the end, when we were totally overrun by cockroaches. It was,
Oh, yes. Yes, and by five and three. And by five and three. You need more space for two growing kids, too, especially at five and three.
Right,
they're
gonna
take up a lot of room.
It was the perfect place to be at that point in our
lives. So. Yeah.
Well, when I go home tonight, I already wrote myself a little post-it note here. I will look in my archives.
That would be great. I would love to know what you dig up.
See what I dig up, and then I'll get a couple pictures and scan them and send them over to you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for talking
to me.
No problem.
I
really enjoyed it.
Back good memories.
Okay. Have a good rest.
Good luck with your work.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to see the final product, whatever it is.
Oh, I will definitely send it.
Is this for a thesis or is this for a class?
No, it's my thesis.
It's your thesis.
Yeah, so I will definitely.
I'd love to see it. And I wish I could remember what Christine's, you know, what her actual thesis topic was, but I know she was out there in the garden interviewing people, so, yeah, if she'd be willing to, I mean, it must be on file in there somewhere.
Yeah.
That might be kind of interesting to read, too, what kind of stuff she did.
It definitely would be. I'm going to look her up.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
I'll get back to you with some archival information.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Bye, Julie.
Bye-bye.